Welcome to MGO Podcast 9.25. If you're looking for Brian and Ace, maybe stick around through the whole thing. Who knows? They might show up near the end. Alright, if you are looking for Brian and Ace, I'm sorry to disappoint you, but I am MGO Do Something, David Nasternak slash hockey beat writer, and I've brought along with me MGO reference Anthony Ciotti. What's going on, Anthony?
Hey, thanks for having me.
Absolutely. I figured I would bring you along since I can frequently ask you what's going on with Michigan hockey and get your intakes, and I know that Brian sits with you at a bunch of games, and since this has been quite a season for Michigan, and they've reached some heights that I don't know that everyone has expected this year, it's probably worth giving them a good half an hour, 60 minutes to figure out exactly what happened this year.
Yeah, I think it's a great idea. I'm happy to be here. I know that it's been a pretty good season. I mean, they've exceeded all expectations, especially the second half of the season, and I think it's definitely worth talking about, and people who are jumping in a little bit late because for various reasons are going to be able to get a good kind of primer and hopefully enjoy some hockey talk.
Well, we've kind of talked all year that after the coaching change and looking at some of the departures and stuff, if they could be in the conversation for the tournament and bounce in maybe in the last couple weeks, I think that would have been considered an acceptable, if not good, season. And I believe it was probably 3 weeks ago that they pushed up to about seventh in pairwise, which is potentially a protected seed.
Yeah, I think when we did the original podcast at the beginning of the season, after the first exhibition game, we had all agreed that being between 16 and 20 in pairwise would have been a good season, kind of like the Wisconsin model from last year. And, I mean, they definitely exceeded that by 10 or so, in the RPI slash pairwise. So it's definitely a great season. And then, you know, compound that with the success they had last weekend. I mean, everybody's pretty happy and, you know, there's not really much to complain about. It's just got two more games and maybe they can even win a title.
Well, they're only two games away. And I was a little nervous going into the weekend given how everything kind of led into it. And they had a week off and there's just a lot of unknowns, I think, heading into it. But I think that obviously the weekend worked out for them as they escape and get to St. Paul. But the other thing is that the development of a lot of the players has really come to fruition as we've seen throughout the second half of the year.
So yeah, coming back from the GLI, I think that they found a good third line with Becker and the Pastajovs together. That started to really formulate into GLI, I think, a little bit, and then right after with the Notre Dame series. And once you set on three lines, you're looking pretty good. I think that a lot of players really stepped their game up coming out of the Christmas break slash GLI.
Yeah.
See a lot of personal, individual gains, and a lot of guys really had good second halves. I mean, the most notable would be Quinn Hughes. He's been outstanding the second half. Probably, the best player on the team, probably the best player in the conference in the second half. And, you know, he's been the driver for a lot of their good play. He's been a really good defensive player. And I think that their record reflects the second half he's had.
Yeah, I would definitely agree, especially about Hughes, but then with half a dozen to 10 other players as well, there was a noticeable change. So before we get too far into this, as we might touch on this a little bit later, let's go with the most recent game that was probably one of the most exciting, sort of nerve-wracking games that we haven't really had in a couple years. Of course, Michigan beats BU 6-3, slightly closer than the score would indicate. What was your overall take on that game?
I thought Michigan played very, very well, considering what they were matched up against. I thought Mel had a really good game plan, and I thought that, they caught a couple good breaks, but, you know, if you look at that game overall, a lot of goals that were weird bounces, a lot of goals that you could call flukes or luck or whatever, but Michigan had the two best goals, the two goals that were most dependent on skill, and that was the actual margin of the game, you know, not right. save the empty netter. So,
sure.
You know, I was actually thinking about that at the end of the game. There was a, you know, the game full of like weird bounces, weird flukes, guys falling down, bounces off the boards, whatever. But Michigan did have the two, you know, really, really good goals. And not to really take too much away from the Greenway goal, because he made that happen himself. And that's, you know, something that, you know, they earned. But I definitely thought, you know, the margin was kind of indicative of, you know, Michigan having the better goals at the end.
Speaking of Greenway, I think it's important to note that he was probably the best player on BU, or one of them, or throughout the year anyway. I know they've always referred to it as the Greenway line that he mm-hmm. plays on, and that's kind of indicative of BU this year, as they have a lot of NHL talent.
Mm-hmm.
Most of their roster has been drafted, or at least half of it mm-hmm. has been, which is seemingly almost far and away above any other team save maybe Minnesota.
Mm-hmm.
So Michigan has their number of draft picks, of course. I think it's about 7. So BU has about twice as many.
Mm-hmm.
And Michigan's going into this game knowing that they're probably at their talent deficient.
Mm-hmm.
And BU does certain things really well and can make a lot of one-on-one plays,
mm-hmm.
as we saw, like the Greenway goal. But that's kind of who BU's been. And it was weird that they were a 4 seed, because you would think with all that talent, they would be able to play really well in a year in Hockey East when maybe the BC was good but not great. Northeastern was, again, good, as we'll get into that later, but they were not great again. And in that kind of a year, you would think that BU would be able to dominate that conference and potentially propel themselves to a 1 seed, but they actually had to win their conference tournament to get in.
Yeah, you know, so when we had written the article last week,
right.
You know, the predictions, I actually had thought that BU would beat Cornell, because they've only lost 3 games in the second half going into the tournament, second half being since January 1st.
Right.
One of those games was when all their players are still at the World Juniors. They also lost a couple games when Greenway was at the Olympics. So with a full roster, they had done pretty well in 2018. So I thought they were hot going into the tournament. I know that in the past we've kind of had a little bit of fun at the coach's expense, because they seem to underperform every year.
Yeah.
They do, you know, I think the Kentucky comparison that Brian had is pretty apt, and it's well-deserved. You know, they do get a lot of good recruits. The coach has ties to the development program. But, you know, like I said, the last 3 months, I mean, the proof is in the pudding. They were basically undefeated with a full squad. That doesn't stop them from having their own deficiencies, as we saw in the game itself. They have 2 outstanding defensemen also, which nobody really kind of even knew about during the game, because you didn't really see them feature too much. Dante Fabbro and Chad Chris. Fabbro was actually on the Canadian World Junior team 2 years. Chris was on last year and for some reason didn't make it this year, which was proved to be a mistake. But, you know, those two guys on separate pairings, so you have a dominant first and second pair, which should be, and you don't really see that a whole lot out of their game. You know, the whole game, you don't see them pushing the puck, you don't see them dominating the puck. So I felt that was a little bit of a deficiency in their part. There was a few times where I was watching their breakout and just thinking, like, how on earth does a team with these top 4 defensemen, like, not break the puck out cleanly? And how does a team with, like, Brady Tkachuk and Greenway just not, like, trashing the opponent in the corners? And, you know, because that's what Brady Tkachuk does. Like, that's what Tkachuk brothers do, is, you know, they get the puck deep and they just dominate in the corners and get the puck out in front. Greenway's kind of got that same skill set. He absolutely plays the same kind of game that Brady Tkachuk does, from what I've seen of him live and, you know, at the World Juniors and whatnot. So the game unfolded as I kind of thought it would, but I was actually watching him very closely, kind of surprised at how, like, deficient they were in some areas. Your charting of the third period, where they basically dominated possession but didn't really get a lot of good clean looks in the middle of the ice, was
yeah.
not all shocking to me when you think about it, based on, like, their recent history with, you know, with the coaching. But at the same time, like, if you're a BU fan, you've got to come away, like, entirely disappointed that this team has basically packed it in and you can't get a clean look with those guys on the ice.
So I remember last year BU came to Ann Arbor. And we saw, so we got to see him play 2 games. I think I actually went to the first game. You went to the second
yes,
game.
Yes, I didn't go to the first game.
Right.
Fabbro had a filthy goal in that game I went to, though.
The second game?
Yes.
So I walked away from that, and I believe Michigan won like 4-1, 4-0. They shut him out or something mm-hmm. like that.
Yeah.
And I don't think that the advanced stats were very Michigan-friendly. They mm-hmm. just got goals.
Right.
And then in the game that you went to, I believe Michigan was up 2-1, or it was 2-2. It was a close game on the scoreboard, and again, I think the advanced stats maybe favored BU. But it's not like Michigan has been, like, walked over, even in a year when they were not doing well. And so Michigan's been able to compete with this team,
mm-hmm.
and you think probably because of the coaching deficiency, which now Michigan has sort of upgraded.
Yeah, there was a big stark difference between the game I watched last year and the game I watched the other day. I went to the 4-2 victory. For Michigan. The scores were 4-0 BU and 4-2 Michigan.
Okay.
I went to the 4-2 victory. It felt like to me that both teams were just endlessly dumping the puck. It was just a bad game for me to watch, and I remember being really disappointed because they were two of the most talented teams. Going into this weekend, I was excited because they were also two of the most talented teams. They were two most talented teams left. Usually that means it's going to be a good game, and it actually was. It was a very good game. I think you could see the difference in coaching between Mel and David Quinn in this game. Mel had deployed the Norris line against that top line. They had packed it in very well. They didn't give BU a lot of chances to pick corners, except for the Greenway goal.
Which that's going to happen.
It is going to happen, and Greenway made that happen himself off of a turnover where he knocked Quinn Hughes right outside the blue line, stole the puck himself, took it in, drove the net, and picked short side top corner. That's a goal scorer's goal. That's a guy who's playing in the NHL tonight as we're recording.
Yeah.
That's not really – you're just going to have to accept that sometimes. Michigan's breakout was far cleaner. Their power play actually I think was a little bit cleaner than BU's, which was shocking to me. I remember by the time that BU got their second or third power play, not even being that worried, despite the fact that Michigan's penalty kill is so bad. the Northeastern game.
Now that's saying something.
The Northeastern game, they had clearly scouted Michigan's penalty kill, and they had a bunch of really nice plays and probably three or four chances. And I really do think that if Northeastern had four or five power plays in that game, Michigan would have lost.
Yeah.
We could talk about that in a little bit. But with this game, they just didn't have anything to stretch that Michigan tight box a little bit, especially with Tkachuk and Greenway. It was also really wild to me that Kreese or Fabro didn't really feature as the defenseman on any of the power plays. I think it was Ference, which he's very good. He's good as well, but it seems so odd to me. It would be like having Quinn Hughes not be on your power play. Like, it just kind of is unthinkable.
Yeah.
Fabro is a top 20 pick. He's played 2 years with the World Juniors for Canada, which is something to say for a university, American university team, to have a player play for Canada. He didn't score that well, but he was their second pair this year for their gold medal winning team. For him not to be driving a power play for a college team is just kind of shocking for me. And, I think it showed. They were a little bit disorganized. They didn't get the kind of shots that Northeastern did. And, I think that's ultimately the difference in the game was Mel matching up against David Quinn, really.
Yeah, you mentioned that to me earlier, too, before this. And a couple things that stood out were, one, I really thought that this game was more of a who's going to make fewer mistakes game in a lot of ways. Because after the first period or so, you could just see mistakes on both sides. And a couple of them led to goals. And you're just like, all right, if they can just not turn the puck over in their own zone, if they can break it out cleanly, they don't have to generate a lot. And they should be able to take advantage of some things.
Yeah, I agree with all of that. I think that at some point in the game, might have even tweeted, but I think if Michigan is just patient and careful, they're going to get goals.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking, too.
And
exactly.
Because you felt like once or twice a period, they were just going to flub a breakout. And Michigan plays a nice pressure, where they're going to get chances off that. They press the middle pretty well. They press the boards decently. They're just going to get some good chances off of a BU mistakes. And I think that's kind of how it ended up. The Slaker goal, they created the turnover right outside of the blue line. It's kind of a bad bounce, but it's still, because of Michigan's pressure and their system
design.
You shut
that guy there.
Yes. And you still, the chance favors the prepared mind in that situation. So, and then Michigan on their side, they only made that one mistake where Norris kind of left Ciccone out to dry, and Norris will probably never do that again. It's a fluke. That's a fluke. It's a bad play, but that's really the only thing they did very poorly, I think, defensively. With BU pressing and those guys with Greenway, Tkachuk, some of the other forwards they have as well, which we haven't even mentioned, it doesn't take you can overcome bad coaching just by aggressively forechecking in that sense. So I think that's why we saw Michigan have such a hard time in the third period is those guys are just talented hockey players, and they're going to have, as Brian was mentioning the other day, they're going to be on you just a little bit faster. Their hand-eye coordination is just a little bit better. So, those pucks that are going up the glass or up going to, stick tape to tape, those guys are going to tip a couple. They're going to, make you make a bad decision.
And that's why, once the third period rolled around, if Michigan could get in the lead, which they were twice, they gave one away and they got it back, the play then is not to go and try to score five or six. It's to kind of sit deep and play your good defensive structure, which they had been showing over the last few weeks, and then they could even take advantage of the bad turnovers by BU, which is kind of a little bit what led to the Boca kind of finishing goal.
Yeah, once BU kind of opened it up quite a bit more, they had that opportunity and they converted. Boca's been really good all year. I don't think he's gotten enough credit. I think he's been underrated his whole entire time at Michigan. I think he's got a really good spot on the second pair with Hughes being here.
Yes.
And so he's able to really drive that. I do think that was an excellent play. You know, Danks breaking in. There's a really nice backhand saucer pass, you know, through the top of the crease. And Boca jumping in. I mean, the whole goal was excellent. And it was because BU was pressing at that point. I think Boca on the weekend, he was marginalized a little bit because they had to they changed up defensive pairing. So his traditional partner, Martin, wasn't with him.
Right.
I think there was a little bit more defensive responsibility for him paired with Griffin Luce. But, I mean, overall, he had a really great weekend. I think he's had a really good career. And I think he's been, you know, pretty underrated. But, you know, they did take advantage of, back to your original point, they took advantage of BU kind of opening it up because they had to. And, you know, you lose a little bit of structure, and if you're not really well coached in the first place, like it gets pretty sloppy pretty quick.
Yeah, so maybe not the most statistically impressive game for Michigan, but we'll take a break now, and we'll come back and talk about a game where they look to be in a lot more control.
Let me just tell you a couple things to keep in your mind while you're out there. When we take the field, we're gonna win. We've got big goals. We've got big ideas. We've got to win this game, and there is no game on the remainder of our schedule more important than the one you're going down to the tunnel to play today. Now let's go. Let's go!
Underground Printing is proud to present the Bow Store. Visit us at our new location at 333 South Main or online at www.bow.team.
It's painless, it's online. It's group ordering made easy for your next custom printed apparel order. Pogo from Underground Printing takes the aggravation out of custom printing for a group. Whether you're selling shirts for a fundraiser, organizing a large event, or trying to collect sizes and payment for a family reunion, Underground Printing is here to help. Save time and hassle every step of the way with our easy-to-use site. No more guessing what to order, chasing people down to pay, or wasting time trying to sort out who needs what. We'll set it up and you can just sit back and relax. We can even take care of individual shipping. To learn more about Pogo, visit us at any of our convenient locations or at pogo.undergroundshirts.com. If you need a place to stay in Ann Arbor and don't want to be stuck out by I-94, there's a new hotel downtown, and the owners, who should be well known to the Michigan community, have asked our help to get the word out. The Martin family, yes, that Martin family, recently opened the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown, just a block from Main Street and a short walk to Michigan Stadium. They're competitively priced and offer a free hot breakfast, free Wi-Fi, fully equipped kitchen and every suite and an indoor pool. That's the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown.
The places you'll go may seem far from Ann Arbor. From San Francisco to St. Louis to Shanghai. But as members of the Alumni Association, we're never far. Because Michigan is more than a place. It's a mindset that connects us. For those who leave Michigan, but for whom Michigan never leaves, this is where you belong. The Alumni Association of the University of Michigan. Join today at umalumni.com.
In southeastern Michigan, the yearly cost for a nursing home averages $90,000. It doesn't have to, though. Reed McCarthy founded Ann Arbor Elder Law after handling a tricky situation for his own family. Years of experience later, his boutique firm works with clients across southeast Michigan dealing with Medicaid planning, long-term care, and tax, disability, and family law, not to mention family dynamics. If you have a family member who may need that level of care, or if you're ready to start your own estate plan, Reed can give you a plan for the future. Visit AnnArborElderLaw.com or call 734-945-9693. That's
before Michigan was able to best BU Terriers, they had to take on a different kind of dog, the Northeastern Huskies, on Saturday. And that one went, I thought, a little bit better overall. I think we came into the game a little nervous about that top scoring line, who is kind of the top scoring line in the country. And Michigan just took it to them. Their top line put Northeastern's top line at a negative -3 for the entire game.
Going into the tournament, I did not want to see Northeastern or Duluth as the first round matchups. You know, as the last few weeks unfolded, those were the two teams that kind of made me uneasy. And so going into this game, I actually had picked, when we were doing our article, I had picked Northeastern to beat Michigan.
Right.
I think I overlooked two things greatly. Number one, the fact that because it's tournament play and playoffs, quote unquote, there would not be as many penalties in the game.
Yeah.
I think that was really beneficial to Michigan because they played a lot more at 5-on-5, and Northeastern isn't as strong 5-on-5. The second thing is I really underrated the correlation between their poor possession numbers and, you know, watching them closely in that game, they didn't really seem to activate the defensemen as much. And it seemed like they didn't really move the puck through the defensive and neutral zone as well as they could have, you know, to kind of help enable that top line. I don't know if it was just something Michigan had done specifically for that game, because their record and overall numbers indicate they probably do it a lot more often. But I think that was my biggest takeaway after the game, is that there wasn't a whole lot of activity from their defensemen. They just really couldn't, you know, break the puck and move it through the neutral zone. And
that's something that Quinn Hughes does, right? Like that's what kind of the difference maker sort of between last year and this year is you have a guy who can take the puck out of the defensive end, get it to the red line, and get it to his forwards, who can then go on and make plays.
Yeah, the difference in the game was especially jarring for me because there were two or three times, I think early on, that Hughes did it himself.
Yeah.
From deep in the neutral zone all the way to deep in the offensive zone. And then, you know, stopping, pulling up, and looking for a play. You know, that's a very valuable thing. And Michigan, I think, was able to benefit from him doing that a few times. Another thing that kind of caught me by surprise, and, you know, Mel actually said this before the game, I hadn't seen it, is that they were going to match top lines. With last change is obviously a luxury Mel has, but at the same time, it was a bet that the second, third, and fourth lines were going to best Northeasterns, especially if you're trying to play the top line to a draw. Which they obviously didn't.
Not in the way we anticipated.
Right.
But definitely taking that.
Yeah, I'm not sure if anyone would have expected Michigan's top line to, you know, to have the results that they did against Northeasterns. But, you know, it was a huge success. And you have to give Mel a lot of credit for whatever they saw, that they were able to, you know, take advantage of that and, you know, have a lot of success. And it was the difference in the game.
And you might be right about that defenseman thing for the poor transitional defenseman from Northeastern, because that might be what Mel saw. Because if he said, hey, their defenseman can't get their forwards the puck, so if we put our best line out and kind of harass their defenseman, then they're not only going to be able to make some plays in the offensive end, which they did, but they'll also be able to limit what the Gaudette line could actually do.
Yeah, and, you know, obviously, like, they were able to do that very well. I don't think the Gaudette line was really that dangerous 5-on-5.
I think they had 9 total shot attempts.
That's pretty low for a line that dominant, I would think.
I mean, it's low for, I think, a lot of lines.
Yeah.
For in just the coursey of having an attempt to get the puck on net, but let alone the quote-unquote best line in the country.
Yeah, I think Northeastern did, you know, like Michigan caught a good break, but Northeastern also caught a bad break because they didn't get very many power plays. It was a crisp game. It's not like the officiating was poor either way. It was not a physical game. It was very well played by both teams, and I think that definitely played into Michigan's hands. When you saw the Northeastern power play, it was dangerous. They had obviously scouted Michigan very well. The first power play, I remember them doing a couple tape-to-tape passes, getting it back through the crease and just narrowly missing, if I'm not mistaken, like a one-timer on the backside. They had some really nice set plays off of that Michigan tight box. The second power play where it resulted in the goal was just a magnificent zone entry, playing off of a couple tape-to-tape passes and catching a backdoor goal like that. Levine could do nothing. I mean, pretty much no Michigan player could do anything. It was just really, really great by Northeastern, but it was nerve-wracking because you knew, after watching those first two power plays, you knew that if Michigan was going to get a couple more penalties, it was going to be really tough sailing to keep them off the board for 4 more minutes. And then the other flip side of that is that's 4 more minutes you're not playing on 5-on-5.
Right.
So that was, I think, the other difference in the game.
And going into the tournament, that's the thing that we were nervous about. But Michigan played so late in the first round that we were able to watch about four, five, six other games. And I didn't see a whole lot of penalties called in any of the games. So coming into that to the game, I was thinking, you know what, if this is called similarly,
right,
Michigan could be okay. Because I think that, and it proved out, but I think they could give up a power play goal mm-hmm. and still be all right. But it was when you started getting to four, five, six power plays that the odds of them getting a second and a third are going to go up. And I just wasn't sure if Michigan was going to be able to overcome, you know, like that ice time deficiency, but then also be able to match goals. They were able to get three, however, and I thought that probably two of them were pretty nice goals.
Yeah, they're all really nice goals. I mean, even the Danks backhand that went under Primo's arm was still a pretty good goal. I mean, you putting it on net, it's a nice backhand play.
Even from such a tough angle?
He's doing the right thing. It's a bad goal for Northeastern to let up, but I'm not going to discredit Dank's effort on that.
Okay.
The other goals were both really good. Also, I mean, I think that Michigan probably should have had four or five goals based on how well Primo played.
Well, he made a number of saves.
He made a lot of great saves,
yeah.
And he controlled the rebounds very well, and Michigan didn't get a ton of second chance plays, and there was quite a few times where Michigan was able to break down Northeastern's defense in front of the net, and he made a couple really nice saves. I mean, he was definitely as advertised. I'd seen them play at the Bean Pot and was really nervous about how good he was. I think, I mean, obviously, if he doesn't let in the goal under his arm, the game might have gone differently, but honestly, I think three goals is kind of what Michigan deserved, maybe even more.
Yeah, well, one right before one of the Northeastern goals, I forget which one, but Norris comes in and Primo is trapped on the right side of the crease. Norris walks right in. I think it was a pass from Slaker mm-hmm. and has probably over half of the net to shoot at, and he literally hits the side netting.
Yeah.
And you're just kind of like, oh, that's the game. Like, if he puts that in, the way Michigan's defense is playing, as long as they don't give up another power play, mm-hmm. I mean, that's it. It's over.
Yeah.
And you know, he missed the net, but, you know, that just adds to the whole thing of, you know, Michigan probably deserved goals against a good goalie, mm-hmm. which is something else that we talked about, like, coming into this game. Not only do they have scoring, but they have a drafted goalie who's played well, put up good numbers. I think his save percentage was 93-something.
Mm-hmm.
And you're like, ah, you know what? I've seen a couple of those goalies this year, and it doesn't always go so well for Michigan.
Right.
But they found a way to get in on him, move him, and they scored a couple nice ones.
Yeah, we hadn't seen a legit NHL prospect, though, with those kind of numbers.
Okay.
You know, and so that's what was really nerve-wracking to me, is he's going to have the athleticism that the other guys don't have.
Right.
And he absolutely did. And he's got the size that
yeah.
the other guys don't have. And so that combination was really daunting, but you know, you have to really give Michigan credit for that, because they earned those goals. And so the game wasn't a fluke. I think that, you know, Michigan deserved to win. They definitely were the better team later as the game drew on.
Yes.
And, I mean, there's not really much else you can say. It was a really, really well-played game by Michigan. And you have to really give Mel credit for the way the game plan was and matching those top lines.
And it played out similarly to the end of the BU game, where they had that lead late mm-hmm. and kind of had to sit. Mm-hmm. and be protective. And I know that, you know, generally when you and I have watched hockey or soccer or sports like that, we like, you know, progressive sports that go forward and create offense and stuff. But in that particular situation, sitting back was the call if you can do it. Mm-hmm. And they've been able to do that, and they did sit in really well. And, mm-hmm. like, Northeastern didn't almost tie the game four times. Like,
right.
Like at the end of the 1-0 Notre Dame game, what did they end up holding on for? Notre Dame could have scored four goals. Pucks
oh, yeah.
trickled just
uh-huh.
past Levine,
yeah, yeah.
just past the post, you know, and
yeah.
they're getting lucky. It wasn't like that this game.
No, we didn't. When the game was over, we weren't sitting there thinking, oh, we got away with one.
Yeah, I mean, if they would have had 30 more seconds,
right.
they definitely get a goal. No, I mean,
right.
it was going to take
yeah.
something for
yeah,
them.
Yeah, that 1-0 Notre Dame game, if that game was 5 minutes longer, you feel like Michigan's not going to win that.
Right.
But, like, you never got that feeling with Northeastern. So Michigan deserved that. It was good.
Yeah, it's a good weekend overall, but I don't think that's how the team has looked throughout the entire year. So why don't we take another break, and we'll come back and look at kind of where they came from.
I grew up in a small town of Hazlitt, Michigan, and I witnessed a lot of great people making a lot of poor financial decisions. And I thought to myself, I don't want to be in that position. I don't want to have my retirement at risk. Over the last 17 years, my team has developed and refined our process, which helps people understand what's important to them and what they value most. And because people don't have pensions anymore, we're adding in multiple income streams during retirement. At Peak Wealth Management, our goal is to build long-lasting relationships. And we do that by building trust, by showing our integrity, and letting them know how much we care. And that's one of the most important things we do here at Peak, is understand your goals and help you get there.
If you're looking for a mortgage and you're a Michigan fan, there's only one place to go. HomeSure Lending. Both fair and honest, HomeSure Lending is local, efficient, and small enough so you'll work directly with the owner, Matt Demarest. Matt bleeds maize and blue, and so does his family.
Hey, this is Matt Demarest. I'm the owner of HomeSure Lending. We're a small, local, family-owned business, and so I'm here with a couple of members of my family, Cooper and Colby, my boys. Cooper, how old are you, buddy?
9.
Colby, what about you?
7.
Who's the best team in the whole country?
Michigan!
Can I get a Go Blue?
Go Blue!
We're a family business here in Ann Arbor. I'd love to serve you and your family with any of your mortgage needs.
Located at 2723 South State Street in Ann Arbor. For more info, go to homeshorelending.com. That's HomeSureLending. You can reach Matt at 734-531-9950. HomeSure Lending. NMLS 1161358. Equal housing lender.
If you find yourself on the wrong side of the law in Ann Arbor or around Metro Detroit, you want a Michigan man in the huddle. Call former prosecutor and now criminal defense attorney Jonathan Paul at 248-924-9458 or visit his website, michiganlawgrad.com.
The places you'll go may seem far from Ann Arbor. From San Francisco to St. Louis to Shanghai. But as members of the Alumni Association, we're never far. Because Michigan is more than a place. It's a mindset that connects us. For those who leave Michigan, but for whom Michigan never leaves, this is where you belong. The Alumni Association of the University of Michigan. Join today at umalumni.com.
We just kind of talked about how great Michigan played in probably the two biggest games of the year, but I don't think that was necessarily our original thoughts back when we were watching the team play in November and December. They have seemingly grown a lot.
Yeah, at some point in late November or early December, I don't remember specifically when, but they were behind Michigan State in RPI.
Yeah.
They were in the mid-30s, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, and while that's a step up from last year,
yeah,
it wasn't something that we were looking for.
No, it was not the improvement we were hoping for. I think there was a few things that were at play, but once they came back from the Christmas break and the GLI and got their full team back, you know, minus Lockwood, they definitely, you know, they took off, and you could see a lot of improvement individually, as we mentioned earlier. So I think right away at the beginning of the season, even at the first exhibition game against the Canadian University, you could tell right away the changes in the system. They were executing pretty well in that game, even though the team really couldn't put up much of a fight. You know, 5 minutes into the game, you could even tell what the changes were, though. They were a lot shorter on their breakout passes. They were a lot crisper on the boards breaking out. They were a lot better at the blue line. They pressed the blue line defensively. They pressed a little bit more forechecking. So they've done those things really well all season. At some point, the defense got a lot less leaky. I think that really helped both goalies. You know, even though Levine ended up taking over full time, I think this helped solidify the back end, is the defense has gotten a lot more responsible in their own zone. They also collapse a little bit more. I think they're just playing better overall defensively.
Part of that's like practice, right? Mm-hmm. Like you have to learn a system, especially maybe when it was different that you were doing the year before, mm-hmm. what you've been taught your whole life. And if Mel brings in, this is how we're going to break the puck out, this is how we're going to forecheck, and it's different from before. Like it's not going to be game four when you're like, oh, everything's going. It's going to take a little bit of time.
I think you perfect it over time. Another big factor was I think everyone learned how to play together, most specifically with Hughes. So I think the first half of the season, there were a lot of instances where people weren't covering for him or he was taking that extra chance. And I think he was given the freedom that he should have been given, but I don't think that the players around him nor him were in sync on how to take advantage of that. It's a risky proposition when you have a defenseman that presses the puck. You do give up chances if you're not prepared to play a certain way. Credit to Mel for, you know, opening that door for him and letting him play and not trying to restrict him. But like at the same time, I think it took a while for the rest of the team to kind of catch up to that, and also for Hughes to kind of dial it in. I saw an interview with, I think it was Marody, over the weekend, where he mentioned that you have to play with Quinn Hughes, and it's 100% true. I mean, even all of the big puck moving defensemen, you know, especially like the big famous ones like Carlson or Brett Burns or, you know, PK Subban, you have to really, the team has to play with them. And so it's a little bit of an adjustment. The winger on his side has to be particularly careful. His defensive partner has to be particularly careful. And a lot of credit to Joe Ciccone this year because, you know, he's been very good back there.
Yes.
And you don't see a lot of times where Ciccone's by himself on a transition.
Not anymore. I think you did, like, in the period that we were talking about.
Right. And in the times where Quinn Hughes is catching up to a guy and knocking the puck away, that's not necessarily bad because he's able to control and defend his chances that he's giving up. So I think overall, you know, you've seen improvement there. Another thing that I think really had a big impact was, and I don't think, you know, I think you brought this up during the break, I don't think it was directly related because I still think they miss Will Lockwood a little bit. Michael Pastujov has drawn into the lineup, as you mentioned.
Right.
And they've solidified a really good third line.
Yes. He came in and I believe played his first game in, I think it was the GLI, or maybe he played a bit before, but it wasn't very much. And as soon as he came in, he's pretty much been a mainstay on the Pastujov with Becker. I mean, they moved it a little bit, but mostly those three guys have played together in that third line for half the season now.
I remember during the GLA trading tweets with Adam where I had the brothers were playing very well and Becker was playing pretty well on a different line. And it would be really neat if they put them together. I feel like that would be a good combination.
Yeah, I actually remember that.
And exactly what happened. And it's worked out really well. And the great thing about that is now you have a solid third line that is going to be around for two more full seasons after this, conceivably. And I don't think you'd ask for much more. I think that's a solid third line at any level at collegiately. I think that, you know, it solves a lot of problems for Mel moving forward as well for the next couple of years. So it's been very good, and I think it's been instrumental in their second half run. It's given them a lot of consistency.
Yeah, and I think another thing to look at in that second half run, like you're talking about, is how, like, they have, what, two seniors and a junior on their top line. Mm-hmm. Well, the rest of their lines are all freshmen and sophomores. Like, they don't have Warren's the one of the wingers on line two, but after that it's all like first and second year players, aside from Pericos, who wasn't always in. I mean, James Sanchez had played and they had tried Alex Ruse a couple times, but for the most part it's been a pretty young back three lines, and it's tough to win with back three lines, and they're not all drafted.
Right, so I think that's part of the issue as well that we saw early on is Mel's getting used to everybody. Players are still fairly inexperienced, and so as it kind of comes together and gels, you do see the really notable things like the formation of a third line and Hughes playing much better. But I think, you know, individually, everybody's starting to play with each other a lot better. I think, honestly, as well, like at some point, you know, everybody started really playing a lot better individually. There was a point where right after the GLI, like, some of the players looked like they had a lot more spring in their step, so to speak, playing a lot better individual games. You didn't see a lot of players getting benched a whole lot in the second half. I just think that something, you know, I think they all kind of came together and things started to click. And, you know, the results spoke for themselves. I think in hindsight that we might have underestimated how good they could be, you know, what their ceiling was, because they do have a lot of talent. They might lack the true top-end talent outside of Hughes that you see at a Boston University or your traditional like Minnesota or North Dakota or whatever. But they do have a lot of talent in the mid-range where, you know, in college hockey today, you know, as Brian had mentioned, like this year, it's not so crazy to see them as an elite team now. Yeah. The way that things have fallen together and, you know, their overall talent level on the team.
Well, and they do have a high-end pick in Norris, but he's not sort of the dynamic offensive center as he – and he'll grow into some of that, I think, but he is more of the Forsberg-esque two-way player.
Yeah, that's another thing is he hasn't scored, I think, in 16 games now.
Yeah.
But that's not really a negative, and I think he should get a lot of credit, and also Mel should get a lot of credit because he's been deployed in a defensive manner. and for a first-round pick to kind of take on that responsibility, you know, that you usually see out of a, frankly, less talented player, lower-end player, taking defensive zone draws. He's really done very well with that role, and because I think of his talent level, he's actually been able to excel at it, even at his younger age relative to the rest of the college hockey. He's fit a really good role for them. He's definitely added a lot of value. He's been, they're probably, you know, obviously the second best freshman, and one of their top five forwards. So I think that he should get a lot of credit, and Mel should get a lot of credit for seeing that in him and deploying him in that way, because they really needed that. I think a lot of last year and prior to Norris really picking up this role was Wimborg, and you can see the difference. You know, you can see the difference in the ability and the ability to win those draws and play good defensively in that zone. Slaker's also made some good strides defensively
and
as
that's
well.
What I was going to say is...
Early in the season, I thought he was not up to snuff defensively with his responsibilities, leaving guys open on the point and whatnot, but I definitely think that line's become a really good defensive line for them, and they're able to deploy it heavily slanted, you know, where they're not going to score as much because they're taking a lot of defensive zone draws, but it's been a really good value for them, and it's opened up the top line.
Right.
Because they're able to do a little bit more scoring, take the offensive draws a little bit more. They've got three really good lines. I don't think the fourth line at the Final Four level or Frozen Four NCAA tournament level is really as effective as it could be. But, you know, playing only two games in a weekend and, what, six games in or nine games in 6 weeks or whatever the playoff structure is, it's something they can live with. You know, they're not playing every day for every other day for 2 weeks like a true, you know, like a real playoff structure. So they're able to get away, and you know, you saw that this past week, and they weren't rolling the four lines as much. They did a little bit in the first game, but they weren't as much in the second game.
Yeah. Well, and part of that probably was also Parikos getting knocked out, but you're right about that.
Yeah. And so I think overall, like, it's been really good. One of the things I've noticed, and I've been thinking about it a lot the last few days, is, and it was kind of a stark contrast to the other teams I saw this past weekend, is you don't ever see Mel asking somebody to do something they can't do.
Hmm.
So Boca and Hughes will rush the puck. They'll jump into the play.
Right.
You don't see them asking Piazza to do it. You don't see them asking Luce to do it. You don't see them asking guys who don't really possess that skill set. He doesn't put players in bad positions. On the power play, he went back to two defensemen.
Right.
And I think that's because what forward are you going to put back there and have the stick handling and hands to play on a blue line like that in a defensive, in an offensive defensive role? I think he recognized, you know, that he would be better off just having two defensemen.
You could probably ask Marody, but you don't want him there.
No, you want him in
a playmaking position on a wing, probably.
But he's not putting someone there who can't handle it.
Right.
You know, he's better off just defaulting to having a defenseman there. And in this sense, it works, right? It's been proven that forwards on the power play are better, but in this sense, I think he understood what his players' limitations were.
Yeah, I mean, you have to play with what your players' strengths are, or else you're going to hurt yourself by trying to force a system that you don't have the pieces for.
Exactly. And then, you know, with the goaltending, Hayden Levine, I think, has been very consistent for them. I do think he's prone to rebound control, but they structure the defense around that, where they collapse a lot.
Yeah.
He doesn't see a lot of rebounds. The puck goes off his cuff of his palm or, you know, off his chest. Usually it's cleared. Or it's not an immediate second chance.
Right.
And I think Mel should get credit for that, for kind of tweaking the defense to play around those, you know, weaknesses. And so at the end of the day, now you have Levine with like a 920-something save percentage in the second half of the season. And that's, you know, a lot of credit to not only him playing consistently, Mel going with one goalie, but also, you know, him structuring the defense around his strengths and weaknesses. And so I think you see in all three facets that Mel's done a really good job of not asking players to do things they can't do. You know, I think he should get credit for that. And, you know, like it's been really, really fantastic.
Yeah, and I'm glad you brought up the Levine thing, because I think we needed to touch on the goalies, because through the first half of the season, Hayden and Jack were both alternating.
Mm-hmm.
And I wasn't necessarily down on LaFontaine at all, but just kind of, I think he got 10 games or something like that.
Right.
And that was unfortunately at the time when Michigan's defense was not quite as good, and as to your point, maybe not structured to his strengths as much.
Right.
And the pucks just kind of went in net. And like that happens in sports, and you can just be unlucky in a small sample size. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I think there's definitely, he could win a job next year. He could do, there's a lot of things he could do. But Levine kind of came in relief form a couple times, looked all right, had a couple nice games against Notre Dame to start the second half. And it was kind of like, all right, he might have just gotten this, and they went forward with it and look good with him. And yes. He hasn't played like at an elite level. Mm. He's had a couple elite games, but right. He has, like you said, he struggles with rebounding. He can be a little slow sometimes moving with his athleticism. But if you understand that and you know that, there are going to be goals you give up. But yes. He's also huge.
Yeah.
Like, I think he makes a ton of positional saves just because he's there.
Right.
And there's not a lot of goalies that are, I think he's like 6'3". Mm-hmm. So he's just like an immense presence in the net.
I agree with all of that. And I think that, you know, when you're willing to understand the trade-offs, everybody is on the same page and everybody can be successful. You know, he didn't have the greatest weekend and he didn't really have the greatest playoffs, but they're able to keep winning and playing very well because the defense is what it is at this point. And because it still gives the goalie confidence when he's still playing every game. It's worked out really well, you know, and I like I said, Mel should get credit for that. They've structured the defense around that, and they've minimized chances. I mean, look at the shot chart from the third period against BU.
I was just going to bring that up.
Jordan Greenway can't get into the house to take a shot, you know, and so that's how you're not going to score on Hayden Levine is, like, because the guy's not getting a shot, right?
Right.
And so I definitely, it's really impressive when you kind of reflect. Like I said, I reflected a lot. After the both games this weekend, I was thinking about it quite a bit. And, you know, that was one thing that dawned on me is he's done a really fantastic job of not asking his players to do things they can't do. And, I mean, it's got them to where they are.
Yep.
And I think that's why you see them at their true talent level at this point. I mean, they're performing like a team with 10 or 11 draft picks, whatever. You know, it's also the reason why they have as good a chance as anyone this weekend to win the national title.
And speaking of the national title, next weekend,
well,
you know, we also have another chance to win a national title this weekend,
right?
So, which is something else that, what, I mean, we haven't even touched on this, but like the last time Michigan did that, well, I was like 8 years old and probably didn't really know a ton about Michigan hockey or Michigan sports at that point anyway. It was like 1993, is what I saw.
So I didn't even actually remember that.
Yeah. They did this before, but neither of us were huge into following.
Right. It's really a welcome thing. I think going in, this is kind of tangential, but like going into both tournaments, I really did think they would make the Final Four in one of them. I thought it was more likely to be hockey just because of the nature of the basketball tournament. But you know,
they had to win more games in basketball.
Right. And they had to play, frankly, better teams in basketball the way it lined up. And, so it's been really good. And, you know, I think this weekend's going to be great, but I think next weekend's really going to be good for Michigan.
So speaking of next weekend, let's take one last break, and we will take a look at a couple of familiar foes and one old foe with a bad memory or two.
If you need a place to stay in Ann Arbor and don't want to be stuck out by I-94, there's a new hotel downtown, and the owners, who should be well-known to the Michigan community, have asked our help to get the word out. The Martin family, yes, that Martin family, recently opened the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown, just a block from Main Street and a short walk to Michigan Stadium. They're competitively priced and offer a free hot breakfast, free Wi-Fi, fully equipped kitchen and every suite, and an indoor pool. That's the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown.
We have a lot in common. You rode the bus to Bursley, so did Larry Page, and so did I. And we all love MGO Blog. I'm Nick Hopwood, your MGO financial coach. My entire family went to Michigan State, but I was the smart one finding my way to Ann Arbor to study econ. I've been a financial planner for 17 years, earning the designation Certified Financial Planner, and founded Peak Wealth Management in Plymouth. Oh, you're pretty smart, and you probably have a sweet retirement spreadsheet already. My job is to make sure. As a financial coach, I make sure you're on track, or if you're not on track, I tell you exactly what you're going to need to do. And if you listen, I'll be able to tell you how your future should look, just like the knowledge. And I have cool charts and graphs to tell the story, sort of like the Mathlete. To learn more or schedule time to chat, check out peakwm.com/mgoblog.
Want the perfect game day outfit? Underground Printing has unique, great-fitting UM apparel and officially licensed apparel from legendary Michigan names like Woodson, Howard, Schembechler, Ufer, and more. UGP also specializes in custom-printed apparel and promotional items for groups, events, and businesses. Whether you need one shirt as a gift or 1,000 shirts for a charity walk, Underground can customize almost anything for groups large or small. To learn more, visit Underground Printing at one of our three convenient locations around Ann Arbor or online at undergroundshirts.com.
Hi, this is Seth from MGO Blog, and I'm actually recording this inside my crawl space because I have some sort of yucky smell and bugs coming out of here. What I should have done instead of what I'm doing right now is call Ecotelligent Homes for a comprehensive home energy audit before the spring thaw makes these smells and bug collections worse. They will find the source of the issue, their licensed teams will install the fixes, they will help you qualify for the right local rebates, and they even offer financing. Ecotelligent Homes is an award-winning DTE Energy and Consumers Energy Trade ally. Call 248-291-7815 or visit their website at ecotelligenthomes.com.
Let me just tell you a couple things to keep in your mind while you're out there. When we take the field, we're going to win. We've got big goals. We've got big ideas. We've got to win this game, and there is no game on the remainder of our schedule more important than the one you're going down to the tunnel to play today. Now let's go! Let's go!
Underground Printing is proud to present the Bow Store. Visit us at our new location at 333 South Main or online at www.bow.team.
So Frozen Four, I believe this is the third Frozen Four that Michigan has made since I've been following it intently. I remember in the 90s and early 2000s they made a couple, but I got to school in 03, and of course they made it in 08 and then kind of backdoored their way in 2011. So this is only the third one for me, and I'm really excited. There should be some definitely good teams. It's going to be tough, but I think that Michigan has a good shot.
Yes, definitely the way they're playing, and it is exciting because there are no fluky teams in the Frozen Four. They're all quality. You know, there's not any underwhelming underdog.
There's no RIT.
Right, and so I think that'll make for two really good games on Thursday.
Yep, the first team we'll look at is the team that Michigan is going to play regardless, and that's Notre Dame. We've seen them four times. All four games kind of similar. First two, Michigan plays them basically to a draw, but Notre Dame converts on three penalties, I believe, power plays. And that ended up being the difference in those games. And then they played them later in the year, and Michigan beat them twice. Once in South Bend, where they won by two goals, actually, and then came to Ann Arbor for probably maybe the craziest game at Yost. Michigan wins 1-0, but they have to hang on for basically the last period or so, mm-hmm. and the last 5 minutes were... I don't know if I should admit this, but like I was practically pacing in the press box.
Yeah, that game was really something else. And, you know, the first weekend was right when Michigan was starting to take off. So it was their first games after the GLI.
Right.
And I remember being at the game in Ann Arbor and thinking, being afraid of Notre Dame because they were like a looming behemoth and they were very, very good at that point. But also thinking, because Michigan was playing very well that weekend, this team isn't really much more talented than Michigan, if at all.
Yes.
Especially if you go down their line.
Well, once we got to the end of the weekend.
Right.
That's what we thought.
Yeah, and I mean, just as the game's unfolding. And so that gave me a lot of confidence in Michigan, especially as they started playing better throughout the rest of 2018. But I think that, you know, their performance against Notre Dame the first weekend was a really good springboard.
Yes, and you could see how even it was in the second weekend when Michigan maybe took advantage of a few more mistakes that Notre Dame made, especially that first period in South Bend on the first game. I mean, they just blitzed them. And I think they had like the first eight shots of the game. They scored a goal right away and didn't really let up. And Notre Dame got back in, won on a power play again, which that's always happens. But then almost didn't score again for the rest of the weekend. I think they got one more goal. But Michigan looked like they belonged and could compete at that level.
Yeah, and it was really great. I do think that when you look at it in hindsight, Michigan does have a little bit of better players. You know, despite the fact that Morris is so good for Notre Dame, Jeff Jackson is famous for his defensive style.
Yes.
He is still one of the best coaches probably ever in college hockey. Still one of the best going right now.
And he's been around for a while.
Yeah, he's been at Notre Dame for more than 10 years now.
He won national championships at Lake State.
Yes,
so it
in the early 90s. He was the first coach of the National Development Program in the late 90s. He's had a really fantastic career, and he's done very well at Notre Dame. He's been there 11 or 12 years now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's been since probably 2004 or 5.
They were the up and coming team at the 08 Frozen Four when they beat Michigan.
Right. And yeah. And I remember that I think it was either 04 or 05, I can't remember which year, but they played Michigan at Yost in the quarterfinals, and the first game Michigan ran them out of the building, and it was like a joke on Notre Dame hockey. And then the second game was, I think they ended up hanging on 3-1 or 2-1, and it was like, well, it was closer than I thought. And that's when kind of Notre Dame took a springboard, and all of a sudden, by the time Hensick was a senior in the Porter years, like, Notre Dame was a legit force, and they've gone on to make Frozen Fours after that and be just kind of a destination in college hockey.
Yeah. I mean, their first year, they were below 500 at Notre Dame, 05-06, and then he won the conference the second year.
Yeah.
Notre Dame was a bad program when he took over as well. So he is, you know, he's great, and it's nice to have Notre Dame back, you know, back in the conference.
It's good to play them.
Yeah, with Ohio State being on the horizon in the Frozen Four, it'll be like, if they do play, it'll be billed as Michigan versus Ohio State.
But sure.
Truly, I feel like in the last two decades, the biggest rivals Michigan has had have been Michigan State, and they've gotten bad.
Yeah.
And then Notre Dame, once Michigan, you know, when they got good.
Yes.
And so it's really nice to have them back. It was nice to have those four games. It's not really a nasty rivalry. Like, Jackson coaches clean hockey.
Yep.
Red and Mel both have coached clean hockey.
And a lot of the A lot of the players play together on the USA teams, right? Mm-hmm. Like, when they're in high school. Mm-hmm. So a lot of the players know each other.
Right.
Sometimes they have kid brothers that go to different... I know Matt Rust. We got Matt Rust, and they ended up getting the other Rust.
Brian Rust,
who is in the NHL now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's been fun playing them. I don't think this is their most talented offensive team.
Definitely
but they
not.
Have a great goalie mm-hmm. in Cale Morris, who has put up some kind of obscene stats. I know he'd reached like over 9.95 save percentage, mm-hmm. which to me seems almost unbelievable.
Yeah, it's stunning. And, you know, a lot of it has to do with their defensive structure. But if you watch him play, he's an absolutely like great goalie mm-hmm. In college hockey this year. They don't really have a lot of offensive firepower. I think they have a second-round pick at forward, and you don't see them really threatening. You don't see them getting into the scoring areas as much as you would expect a team that was number one most of the season. But I think that's, number one, the reality of college hockey now. It's like, as Brian had, like as we've been talking about, it's a little bit of a down year from high-end talent. The teams with real high-end talent aren't fantastically coached, so you're not seeing like the elite-level teams advancing this far. But at the same time, like, you know, he's got a program now, and so even in his down years, talent-wise, he's still going to be very good because, you know, he's created a program and it's on a roll. I mean, they made the Frozen Four last year, so and he's going to be able to coach around those deficiencies as well. So, and I think that's what you've seen. They haven't been really that great the last couple months.
I was just going to say that, like you were talking about the power play, like, that's how they've gotten to Michigan this year. And that is the biggest weakness that Michigan has. If you had one thing you'd eliminate having to worry about, it'd be the penalty kill. Because in the four games they've played, Notre Dame has scored five of their six goals on the man advantage. And that's kind of what I think that they're more dependent on. Because you look at their possession numbers, and they're not great, and Michigan's been able to skate with them 5-on-5 and score goals with them.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, you know, the key every week is, can you stay out of the box? And hopefully it will, the trend of fewer penalties and fewer penalties called will continue. Mm-hmm. And if that happens, I mean, I like Michigan's chances in this game.
Yeah, for this game specifically, my only concern would be is Jackson having 2 weeks to prepare. So he's going to understand where Michigan's bested them. I mean, frankly, Michigan has been the better team at 5-on-5 in the four games. Even though it's split, you would think Michigan's been the better team overall in the matchups as well.
Yeah.
Despite the fact that they won the conference and won the conference tournament, I think Michigan would still be a slight favorite in this game, in my opinion. But I am afraid that, you know, Jackson is going to have some time to figure things out. They're going to have 2 weeks of practice. And it will be, I think it's going to be a little bit of a tougher game than we've seen Notre Dame put up, even though that seems odd, right?
Like, yeah.
But I still do think it's going to be a very tough game. But I do favor Michigan a little bit.
So what you were alluding to was they pretty much steamrolled through the Big Ten for the first half of the season and ended up losing their first game, I think, in late January to Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm.
And then a few weeks later, they played Ohio State and won the Friday game, and that clinched the Big Ten regular season title for them. And they had barely lost any games since, like, October, so they were probably going to be a one seed unless they went in the complete tank.
Mm-hmm.
But starting with that Saturday night after they'd won, they lost to Ohio State, kind of got run out of the building, and then played Michigan the next week and lost two games. So we're 50-50-ish, but Michigan was probably the better team. And then dropped a game in the last weekend to Michigan State. Mm-hmm. And so they haven't been great. Mm-hmm. And then they had a week off and didn't play. They only played two games before the NCAA tournament and won them both in overtime,
right?
I believe. Or no, I'm sorry. One was at like the very end. They scored
like 20
seconds.
Yeah, it was like the last minute against Penn State. Yeah.
Against Penn State. Beat Ohio State in overtime. Mm-hmm. It took overtime to beat Michigan Tech. Mm-hmm. And then won at the very, very end in their most recent game against Providence. So it's not like they're blowing teams away.
Yeah, I think that's where you're seeing a little bit of the downside of the Big Ten playoff schedule. So they got a bye.
Right.
And they're playing a single game for the next two weekends. So going into the first weekend of the NCAA tournament, they've played two games in, what, 3.5 weeks? Yeah. And prior to that, they were, like, they had the whole thing wrapped up. So, I mean, they'd obviously taken their foot off the gas a little bit losing to Michigan State. And so now you're looking at 5 or 6 weeks of really not being in tip-top, not really rolling. And so I think that's, they're going to have to find that in the next 2 weeks through practice and, you know, preparation. But I do think that might favor Michigan a little bit, as they haven't played their best hockey in a little while now.
So, you know, you can never predict in this kind of strange environment where one game takes everything and it's a neutral site and we don't really know a lot of those extraneous variables. Mm-hmm. But I'm not kind of walking into that nervous. I mean, you're nervous, but I think that if things go how they generally would go, what you'd expect from the percentages and the statistics, mm-hmm. I think Michigan has as good a shot in this game as they would against most teams in the tournament.
Absolutely. Yeah, but it, you know, overall, it's been great having them back in the Big Ten. Did one of these conference rooms get named for the Big Ten?
I don't know.
For Notre Dame?
I don't know if we can. We like Notre Dame because we want to play them, but we don't like Notre Dame because they're Notre Dame. So I don't know if we can honorarily name
just as long
name.
As they don't.
So the weird thing is,
I don't want an Arizona State conference room if they add them to the hockey conference. That's
no.
Right. Okay.
The weird thing is we're recording in a different room than normal because there was a previous engagement, and so maybe this is the Notre Dame room.
Could be, yeah.
But we can discuss it.
Hopefully it'll bring them bad luck.
There you go. So if Michigan is lucky enough to beat the Irish, one of the teams they could face is not necessarily a familiar foe, but a foe with a couple of pretty bad memories and a long drive home from 2011, as Michigan doesn't have a storied history with Minnesota Duluth, but they have one big point that I think they would like to rectify.
Yeah, the Duluth is an interesting team. They've lost 16 games this season. They were a three seed. Yeah, they were, I think, the last team in the tournament, right?
By like 1/1000th or 1/10000th of a pairwise number.
Uh-huh.
Like six games had to go against Minnesota.
Right.
They all did. Huh. And it ended up putting Duluth in and Minnesota out.
And tangentially, that's very bad for Michigan because they hired Bob Motzko now.
Yes. Yeah, I saw that.
So it's very bad. Yeah.
I'm going to miss Don Lucia.
Yeah. I am too. I already do. but yeah, so the Duluth Ohio State matchup to me definitely would favor Ohio State, in my opinion. I think Ohio State is the most threatening team left to win a national title. I would favor them out of the four, but Duluth is not a pushover. So I think they've been playing well. They had some injury issues early on, mm-hmm. from what I understand.
Mm-hmm.
They also had 5 players gone at the World Junior Championships.
Well, that'll.
Yes. And so I think some of those things should be considered. Their schedule in the second half, they've been mostly good. They've lost 7 games overall, so it's not great, but I mean, they have a lot of wins in there. They did do pretty well against Minnesota State in the first game, mm-hmm. and they definitely did really well against Air Force. Yeah, they got a little bit lucky drawing Air Force and not St. Cloud, but I mean, they're not really a fluky team. They're a quality team. I think that they're kind of the victim of this only being a 35-game season versus like a 70-game season, so to speak. So
okay.
It might seem like a little bit of a fluke, but I think if you played 35 more games with this lineup, being very young, you would see a lot more progression. So I have a lot of respect for the players. I thought they were all pretty good at the World Juniors, which to me is a big indicator of overall talent level because you're only playing against peers.
Sure.
You know, so, you know, they had a repeat guy, Joey Anderson. They have 3 drafted forwards, 2 drafted defensemen that are playing on the regular. Perunovic, who's their number one right D, actually was on the World Junior team as well. He's a 19-year-old freshman who will probably be drafted. He's rated pretty low, but with being near a point a game, I can't imagine him going undrafted again. So
yeah.
He went undrafted last year.
That's weird, isn't it?
It is odd. I mean, he's 5'10".
Okay.
I really liked him at the World Juniors. I don't know... people who didn't watch, Quinn Hughes went and did not play particularly well, to the point where he was playing like 2 minutes in the medal round,
wow,
you know, per game. Perunovic had started at the bottom of the lineup and worked his way up, and I think he took a lot of Hughes' minutes as the tournament went on. He's definitely got a similar skill set, obviously not as good as Quinn Hughes.
Okay.
Like, I mean, we're not going to fool anybody. But being a year and a half older and playing a little bit more of a simple style, you know, playing within himself, he was able to draw those minutes.
And he got a bunch of accolades, right? Like,
yeah,
he was the offensive defenseman of the year. He was the freshman of the year in the conference. And
yeah, he's a good player. I think he'll move the puck well. I think he's someone that Michigan is going to have to be prepared for. But they also have two drafted defensemen on their second pair as well, Sandberg and Mikey Anderson. So in their first line, is also got two guys who went to the World Juniors, Riley Tufte and Joey Anderson. Joey Anderson was the captain. Tufte played on a fourth line role, was not someone I was overly impressed with, didn't think he should have been on the team, would have preferred a couple other players in his place, but that's a pretty good first line, you know, for a college team, like to have two World Junior caliber players. And I think that overall they're going to be formidable for Ohio State, with the goalie having such a good save percentage.
Mm-hmm.
I do not think this is some kind of walkover game for Ohio State. I don't know which team I would actually prefer to play.
Wow. Well, that's a compliment.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, like, I'd like to beat Ohio State.
I
think to be the man, you got to beat the man, so
sure,
to speak. And Ohio State is the one dragon that Michigan hasn't slayed yet this year. But I do think that Minnesota would pose a good threat, and I don't think they're any less of a chance to win than anybody else in the tournament. Frankly, I think it's 25% all the way around for the four teams.
And they're also going to be the home team.
Yeah.
As
that
found
too.
Out
and
last
yeah,
time.
So being there in 2011, you were there,
yeah,
right?
Oh, yeah.
And I was there. It will be very Duluth heavy,
yep,
you know, and the other teams will travel well, but Duluth is 2 hours away. That is a hockey state. People who are there casually will probably be rooting for Duluth. It's not like a huge rivalry,
right,
you know,
no,
like,
no.
So they will have the home ice advantage, and it will be, I think, in my opinion, noticeable.
And they're well coached.
You know, they do have a good coach. Sanderlin's done a good job there. They weren't like a power before he took over.
No.
You know, they've
and since they won that title, I mean, their program's changed. Like, they've played a lot better. They've made tournaments. They made the Frozen Four last year. Played in the title game. Played Denver pretty tightly. Denver is probably the best team regardless, but they're a legitimate program now.
Yeah, yeah. And that's another thing is we've got two repeat Frozen Four teams from last year. So, yeah, it's going to be a tough battle. I do think Duluth's a little bit underrated because their record's poor, but they're also pretty young. But it does say a lot to have five guys on a World Junior team like that. That says that, you know, they're well respected, they're good players, especially compared against their peers, and so I wouldn't sleep on them against Ohio State.
So speaking of Ohio State, they are the fourth team that has made the Frozen Four, and they're the only team from 2011 that is different,
mm-hmm,
as Notre Dame, Duluth, and Michigan were all there in 2011 in the same building. So I guess Ohio State is this year's North Dakota from and they play like them.
The fans are very similar also.
Yes. Ohio State is kind of like Notre Dame with maybe a little more offensive talent. They have a really good goalie who has a nice save percentage. Michigan's seen that, I don't know, too many times now. And he's played well. He doesn't give up many bad goals that I've seen. They came to Yost and kind of beat down a Michigan team that's not the same anymore. So I'm not paying as much attention to those games. But when they played in Columbus the last time, Michigan basically played them to a draw, and it wasn't in their home rink. It was in downtown where the Blue Jackets play, and there weren't quite as many people as probably would be there otherwise. But Michigan had chances to win that game. They never led. They gave up a power play goal, which is kind of the norm. They have, what, a line that's pretty good? Lisinski, Jobst, Dakota Joshua has played well. But I think that this is a team that is structured more around their sound defense and their goaltending.
Extremely well coached.
Yes.
So they don't make a lot of mistakes. Ohio State, even last year, because they did beat some good teams last year.
Well, they made the tournament last year.
They had a good season. And when they came to Michigan last year, I thought it was one of the best coached teams I had seen all year. It's probably true for this year as well. Rolick's done a great job with them. They're just very, very conservative and defensively. They don't make a lot of mistakes. They will make you pay for yours. And they get the most out of their players. I mean, they do have limited offensive talent. They do have some very good players. Lisinski was a World Junior player last year when he was eligible. But if I had to pick a slight favorite, they'd probably be the team that I would think that would win.
Yes.
They played Notre Dame essentially to a tie in South Bend, mm-hmm. you know, in the overtime game. It's definitely, they're definitely good. Rolick should get a lot of accolades. They're enjoyable to watch despite playing defensively. I mean, Notre Dame is as well. You don't really like, they're not sludging it up in the neutral zone. They're just very, very sound and very disciplined. They are older, so they should be, it should be mentioned, they are older than the other three teams. So Notre Dame, Duluth, and Michigan are all a little bit younger teams.
Okay.
So I think there would be a little bit of an advantage there.
The other thing,
considered.
Yeah, the other thing that Ohio State has going for them, and I think they have the top penalty kill mm-hmm. in the nation, and their power play is not bad either. Mm-hmm. I think they're top 10-ish. Right. So when you get on special teams against mm-hmm. them, they're very comfortable playing that way as well. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's the thing that Michigan has to avoid, I think. And especially considering, like, if they get into a penalty fest, Ohio State's probably going to be able to capitalize because mm-hmm. of Michigan's deficiency on the kill. And Michigan is not probably going to be able to capitalize on their power play because Ohio State does a great job of killing it. And it took that, like, spinorama goal from Cooper Marody in the last time they played for Michigan to score on the power play. And that's just kind of like a wonder goal.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So for me, I think in this matchup, it's going to be is Quinn Hughes going to be great again? You know, in that game against Ohio State in the playoffs, he had those chances. He hit the post. Yep. He was generating a lot off of his own. He's going to be the best player if Michigan plays Ohio State. Probably going to be the best player against Notre Dame as well. So that would be where I would see Michigan drawing an advantage against Ohio State potentially.
Well, and I'll tell you what. If Michigan can play both those teams to a draw mm-hmm. and the difference then becomes will Quinn Hughes play well to push him over the edge, I'm comfortable with those chances.
Yeah, and I think that's kind of what they're trying to do anyway.
Yeah.
You know, I think that's the way the team is structured. And, I mean, I'm comfortable with that. I think that's the intelligent way to approach it, honestly.
So, in a very apropos fashion, you have to get to your own hockey game. Mm-hmm. But let's just make a couple predictions. Who do you think plays in the championship, and who would you give the advantage to?
I think Michigan's going to beat Notre Dame. I think they've shown really well against them, and I think they're playing better than Notre Dame right now. And I think they have a talent advantage. So, I would think that Michigan would be the favorite.
I agree with that.
Yeah. In the other game, what do you think?
Man, I was definitely leading Ohio State, and then when we both realized where the game is played and how there's just going to be probably 40 sections of Duluth fans and two sections of opponent fans.
Right.
So I still think that Ohio State's just tough, and they're tough on all areas of the ice. Uh-huh. There's not something you can take advantage of. Uh-huh. And just until someone finds a way to beat them that way, considerably beat them, I have to go with Ohio State.
I am really looking forward to that game aesthetically. Like, I think that's going to be a really fun hockey game. I'm looking forward to the Michigan game because I'm nervous about it. Like, yeah, it's great they have that chance. But like,
yeah,
that Duluth Ohio State game is going to be really great. It's I'm glad it's the first game, so we can enjoy that before you know the Michigan game. But yeah, I agree with you. I think it's a little bit more of a coin flip than people think because of what you were saying
right.
with the home crowd. I think Ohio State's going to win. I don't know. I feel like they're the best team I've watched this year, and I think they're going to beat Duluth for that reason.
Yeah, and I don't necessarily favor Michigan over Ohio State if mm-hmm. they play them. I think they can beat them. They haven't yet, but like, how many times in a row can you beat a team? Sometimes it, you know, the bounces are going to go your way. But I'll tell you what, the bad luck that Michigan's gotten against Ohio State in sports in general over the past however many years, this would be a nice karmic bump.
Yes.
If it can start taking advantage and flipping it the other way. So if we can get a couple of bounces in that game, we make it to that game and we get that, I'll start being okay with like the randomness of the world again.
I wish this team was called something else other than Ohio State because I don't like the idea of it being the rivalry because they are a really enjoyable team to watch. They're a really good team. And I want Michigan to beat them, but not because they're Ohio State, because they've played five times and Michigan's progressively shown better against them each time, and it's time to slay the dragon.
Like, yep.
That's how I feel about it. The fact that they're Ohio State makes it weird for me, honestly. Like,
especially in hockey.
Yeah, because they're not really rivals. You know, they've had that really one really great year against each other. I think it was 04.
Yes.
When Kessler was on the team in the Montoya season. But, I mean, overall, like, they haven't traditionally been rivals. There's just been two teams in the same conference that have played against each other. I think if they play in the finals, it'll kind of get overblown that it's Michigan and Ohio State. And to me, that's too bad because it's going to be great hockey if they play. And I don't want the distraction of, you know, Michigan versus Ohio State to take away from the fact that, like, probably on a collision course, you know. Hopefully on a collision course.
So. And regardless of who Michigan plays, there's going to be a big narrative. And this is, either way, I think it is time to right a wrong.
thank you for listening to the MGO podcast. This is Anthony Ciotti with David Masternak. And I have to say, he let you down. Brian and Ace weren't here. But thank you for listening anyway, and thanks to them for having us.
Who's got it better than us?